chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the martyr walk the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? In the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? I hope you've had a good weekend. Lots of stuff going on in the world of food this weekend, that's for sure. Hope if at the very minimum you had a chance to get to your local farmer's market. I went only to the Sebastopol Farmer's Market today because... Oh, I was a little bit lazy. I usually go to at least two. But the patch of Sonoma still has really, really good tomatoes. Just before the storm of last week or whenever it was, Lazaro went out and he got his very long hoop house and covered his tomatoes. And the temperatures has been fine. So we haven't lost tomatoes because of temperature, but we have lost them because of the rain. But he protected his and expects to have them through the end of the month. And they are really very, very good. I made one of the best tomato soups I've made in years with his tomatoes. And I'm going to make some more tomorrow. I'm very excited about tonight's show. It's something that I have been wanting to explore for years and just haven't found the right guests until now. And I have to thank one of our guests, Larry Carlin. Welcome back to Mouthful. It wasn't so long ago that you were here.
Not so long ago, right?
Yeah, the Jewish Food Festival.
Correct.
And you were so helpful in helping me. I told you that I wanted to explore the topic of kosher and halal, and you knew just the right people to invite. So I'm very grateful.
One of the reasons I knew that is because we have at our Shomrei Torah, we have a Jewish-Muslim dialogue that we set up with one of our guests tonight, Imam Ali Siddiqui, and we have put our groups together, Jews and Muslims, for going on almost 3 years at this point. And so that's why I knew when you said you wanted to do it, I knew just the person to take care of the halal part of the...
Well, that's excellent. You know. And welcome to Mouthful, Imam Ali.
Thank you so much.
And you're based here in Santa Rosa?
Santa Rosa, yes. I moved here in 2009 from Southern California.
Mm-hmm. And then we also have with us from Congregation Shomrei Torah, Rabbi Stephanie Kramer.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Welcome. I think the way that we should start is just in a very concise way. Let's tell our listeners what kosher is and what halal is. I'll start with kosher, because kosher is at least to some degree familiar, because certainly anyone who knows me, because I'm always saying kosher salt, kosher salt, kosher salt. So what is the tradition of kosher?
The tradition of kosher is such a huge tradition. It goes all the way back to our most sacred text, the Torah, but then it really goes through the ages after that. So in the Torah, it's broken up into three main categories, divisions. First, the permitted and forbidden foods, then the proper slaughtering of meat and fowl, and then the separation between milk and meat. And then once you get from the Torah or from our biblical passages into the oral Torah, so our Talmud and our Midrash that were written much later, you get even more and more rules pertaining each of these three categories. So there are actually fences built around fences, and the rules get more and more stringent.
Interesting. And who follows, that's not the right way to put the question. People who follow kosher, do they follow it 100%, or do they do it in degree? If you have fences upon fences, it makes me wonder if people will go into it by degree.
So absolutely, that's a really interesting question. So the Orthodox community follows the kosher laws the most stringently. So they would follow all of them. Mm-hmm. And then when you get into conservative and reform Judaism, you have different variations of how they're following the laws. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not following absolutely all of the laws or all of the rabbinic laws, but mm-hmm. rather following some of the biblical laws.
Okay, great. So I think that's a great nutshell. So now, Imam Ali, could you do something similar with halal for us?
Yes, I will try. So there is actually two terminologies that we need to understand. One is halal, what is allowed by God, and other is haram, which is forbidden. And haram also means what is sacred, and you have don't touch that. So in the Holy Quran, God Almighty commands not just the Muslims, but all human beings, and he says, "Ya ayyuhan nasu kulu mimma fil ardi halalan tayyiba." And say, "O human being, eat what I have provided for you, and what is allowed halal, and what is tayyab, wholesome." And there's two things coming here. One is halal, that you eat what's allowed for you. Other is tayyab, which is wholesome for you. And organic food could also go into the same category. So now this is the whole process that where it goes going on, as Rabbi Kramer says, it's an ancient time, from the time of great prophet Abraham, our patriarch. He started that, and from that, billions of people have nourished from this. Both Jews who follow kosher and Muslims who follow halal, they keep it up. Now, this is also possible that many Muslims may not follow halal tradition. But they still do in some way. And some follow strictly, some a little bit relax. And the tradition is still, it is something that we as a Muslim have to do it.
One thing I've been really curious about in my reading, which has not admittedly been extensive, but it seems like there's very specific overlap between halal and kosher in certain ways, and then things that don't overlap. I'm wondering if we could just like explore that arena a little bit. What are some of the similarities between the two traditions?
Okay, the couple of similarity. Number one, that we do not consume any pork in any shape and form.
And that's both.
Across the board. Okay. Then on the other side, you know, when we slaughter animals, which is permitted animals, those animals which do not prey on other animals, in that case, first of all, you know, you have to, in kosher, you have to bless it. And in Islamic tradition, we have to take permission of God, because we have no right to take life even of animals. So we say, Bismillah, Allahu Akbar. then and we have to be humane in our slaughtering. Mm-hmm. We sharpen our knife and cut the jugular veins, and we do not slaughter an animal in front of another animal.
Mm-hmm.
And we also feed water before we slaughter them and let the body cool. So these are the things that we can see as common. And there's some variation is small here and there. So much so, the Jews and Muslims living in Brooklyn, they go together and slaughter. And they shear.
Okay.
And the kosher from the Orthodox Jews is acceptable to the rest of the Muslims also.
Mm-hmm.
When the halal is not available, we can have that
You can
kosher.
Use kosher instead?
Right.
Oh, interesting. That's really interesting. Do we know, going back in history, do we know why, say, pork is forbidden?
It, in the Torah, it's forbidden. So God actually says that you should not eat pork. There are specific foods that are strictly forbidden, and that's one of them.
Okay, and is
as well as bottom feeders.
Yeah, and, shelf, yeah.
Right. Animals that feed off of one another, and also animals with certain restrictions for their body.
So you don't want, you don't eat, you can't eat carnivores.
Yes, we cannot eat carnivores. So actually, with the pig, the God Almighty created zillions of animals. And each animal has a purpose. So God says in the Holy Quran that some are for transportation, some are for doing sort of other tasks, some for keeping up the ecosystem clean, and some are for your food. So pig is the animal which is for the keeping the ecosystem clean.
Oh, okay.
And there are many animals, not just that. And, of course, over a period of time, it's been domesticated and people start consuming it. But Muslims and Jews, even this day, do not consume pork or ham or bacon.
Right,
or
anything that comes from the pig.
Yes.
And is the same true about shellfish? Is like no crab, right? Am I right with crab? Because crab is a bottom feeder?
Correct.
Okay.
So catfish.
Oh, catfish, okay.
Bottom feeder.
Oh, interesting.
So for Muslims,
so they seem like they do the same thing. They clean the ocean floor.
Yeah. But for Muslims, anything that comes out of the ocean alive can be consumed.
Okay. So, okay.
But amphibian, we don't eat.
And we just don't eat shellfish or bottom feeders. They have to have gills and fins.
Gills and fins. There you go. Okay.
There are a few exceptions or a few things that are a little debated.
For example,
I've lost the word for the fish.
That's okay.
I'll think of it.
Well, yeah, you'll think of it, and we'll come back to
swordfish.
It. Swordfish. Oh, swordfish.
Swordfish is debated amongst Jews. Some permitted, and some do not.
Very interesting. And then I know in the Jewish tradition, in the kosher tradition, there's the separation of what is it, dairy and meat. Is that correct? Is there something similar in halal?
No, we don't have that.
Okay. So let's tell us a little bit about that.
So in the Torah, it says that you're not permitted to boil a kid in its mother's milk. So that would say that...
And by kid, we should say that's a baby goat. Just want to keep things clear.
Right. So so that would really be animals that can produce milk that you would not want to actually cook that animal in its mother's milk is how we interpret that law from the Torah. However, later in other rabbinic texts, it was expanded so that you wouldn't notice someone eating a chicken sandwich with cheese on it and think that they were possibly breaking a law. And therefore, it was expanded to chicken and to turkey and to other forms of meat per se.
So you don't, you don't eat Reuben sandwiches. You don't eat things with cheese with the meat.
Correct.
Okay, interesting. So there's no parallel in halal.
No, we have no restrictions.
Okay. I know one restriction in halal, I think, is no alcohol.
Yeah, no alcohol in any shape and form, whether it's a beer, wine, any liquor. Anything which intoxicates is not allowed.
Okay.
So there is our argument goes on. The commandment, it says, when I stay away from those things which are intoxicating.
Oh, okay.
So some people say, use like, well, you know, I won't get intoxicated in one drink.
Right.
But then say slippery slope. So you stay away from it.
Right. And does that apply to anything non-alcoholic? I mean, does that imply other beverages that have some sort of psychoactive effect? I mean, even from coffee. Is coffee okay?
Coffee is okay. Tea is okay.
Uh-huh.
But which has alcohol contents in it.
Okay, so it just applies to alcohol. Right.
The same thing goes on, they have wine, which is alcohol-free,
mm-hmm.
or beer is alcohol-free.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not allowed because alcohol was there before.
Yes, it was.
And then it was removed.
Ah, okay. And then...
And we also have many, many, many... rules pertaining to the wine that we drink. Alcohol, by far, Jews consume, and Jews also consume a lot of wine, but we have strict laws pertaining kosher wine and wine that we consume specifically for services, but really many Jews take it and any wine that they consume. And that means that the wine actually has to be kosher wine, which if you look into that means that no non-Jews were ever supposed to touch the wine or be part of the process.
Yeah, I think the last time that you were here, Larry, you talked about how the grapes for kosher wine had to be gathered by Orthodox Jews, I think.
Right. Orthodox Shabbat observant Jews. And so not only that the grapes had to have to be gathered by these Orthodox Shabbat observant Jews, but that the entire process all the way up to serving the wine would need to be Orthodox Shabbat observant Jews. And the way that they've traditionally gotten around it, that is that they would take the wine and boil it, which, if you know anything about wine, it then doesn't taste great. So they have recently come up with a different process of this flash boiling process that does make it taste better and gets around the rules about who can touch the wine and who can serve the wine.
Interesting.
However, I would say that the reform movement really shies away from these rules because we find it so completely offensive to our liberal view point.
Yeah,
I can tell you that most of the people that I know at Shomrei Torah drink all kinds of wines.
Okay,
it's just good wines is because there's, you know, as Rabbi Kramer says, we're mostly we're a Reform synagogue, and so we're not bound by that kind of tight situation.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
And even though it was before my time at Congregation Shomrei Torah, I know that the congregation really did engage in this debate over the wine that we were going to serve for ritual purposes during Shabbat. So they really came together and studied these rules governing wine, and they decided they really did not want to serve traditional Mogan David wine because it didn't taste great, and we're in Sonoma County and we really want wine that tastes fabulous. But they looked over all of these rules and decided that the wine needed to be red for ritual purposes and it needed to be a sweet wine. But what they decided to do is really to import a red sweet wine from Israel to connect us to Israel and to our community and our people. And that's what we use today. So it's not the absolute best tasting or Sonoma County wine, but it serves many purposes.
Sure. Very interesting. Now, I know in most of what I know about halal comes from the restaurants I was able to ask about. And one of the things that they talked a lot about when I was in Malaysia, where there were a lot of halal restaurants, was that there was a dimension that included how employees were treated. Is that something that was that an add-on in that area, or is that something that comes under
the... No, actually, not only the employees after the fact, but at the ranches and slaughterhouses and all that, they also has to be taken care of it.
Mm-hmm.
and they have to be clean, and facilities has to be clean, and the whole process has to be clean process and healthy. So this goes on in other things also. So one of the purpose of halal and haram is that to strengthen the community economically.
Oh, okay.
So now if you do not treat the employees in the same way, then it's not going to benefit them or anybody else for that reason. So you have to take care of them and treat them well.
Very, you know, this is all just so fascinating to me. I believe so strongly that food and how we feed each other is at the heart of community.
Right.
So it's so interesting to see these building blocks to support and make that possible.
So, you know, if you go back to in early time, the most community evolved from the agri model. They were farmers, you know, or ranchers and hunter and gatherers. That's how the community came about. So this is the basic building block. And in this basic building block, you have to take care of all the people. First of all, the animals you're taking care of, the land, you maintain it properly. For example, it's also a tradition that when you are cultivating, you cultivate only one portion and they keep the other portion, and the next season you do the other one. So you don't deplete the land. For example, I just came back from Spain, and I saw when during the Muslim rule of Andalusia, they used this what's called cactus figs to divide the farmland into small parcels. And then they will have on one plot, they will cultivate wheat, and other one will be left alone. The next season, they move the crop on the other side. So by the time the turn comes, the earlier the plot, it will be all ready. So you're taking care of you're taking care of the animals, you have to treat the animals in a humane way, because this is this is where your economy come from. If you don't take care of them, then you will have nothing left.
Yes. So interesting. You're going to say something?
We have similar rules about grains and farming as those, but our kosher rules pertaining to animals don't really talk about how the animal is treated before it's slaughtered. So we have rules pertaining to how the animal is slaughtered, but not how the animal is treated before slaughter. And therefore, in recent years, two other forms of kashrut have really come to fruition, and that's eco-kashrut and ethical kashrut. And these movements have really talked about how animals are treated before their slaughter, that they need to be, you know, treated in a very humane way, even before they're actually slaughtered.
So actually, you know, there's a one saying of the Prophet Muhammad, and he said, if you kill, sharpen your knife. Sharp knife is very humane. It doesn't give the pain to the animals. Although we say, well, animals don't feel pain. But they do.
Of course they do.
So you have to be, and then you don't slaughter animal before in front of the other animals. That's not humane either.
Yes.
And then you give water to the animal before you slaughter. And then there's a certain age limit on the animals. We cannot get younger and younger, but actually certain age, then you can slaughter them.
A question, Ali. Why would they give water before the slaughter?
It's a human treating them well, so they will have water.
So they won't be thirsty. They'll be comfortable.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it could be some technical reason also, because maybe water goes in the body, so the blood can come out faster. But mostly it's a human reason. Treat them as if... So one of the traditions, like last month, we had our biggest festival of Eid al-Adha, which comes right after Hajj. During that time, families will... Earlier, like a month ago, they will purchase an animal and keep in the family as a pet. And then they will offer the sacrifice in the tradition of Abraham. And so they will feel that suffering as they slaughter it, because it was animal was with them. So they've been taking care of them, and they decorate the animals, you know, and they consider as one of the pets. So this is how we want to do all the animals.
Mm-hmm. To treat them that well.
That's right.
So sort of a symbolic expression of how they should all be treated. So it's so interesting.
We have similar laws about the blade and how the blade needs to have no nicks or marks in it, needs to be very sharp, needs to be with one slice
exactly.
of the jugular vein. But we traditionally we didn't have the next step, the prior steps
right.
in the process, that treating the animal
right.
nicely, making sure that it was well fed, that it was well cared for, that it had lots of room to move around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many people who do the new forms of ethical kashrut would never eat veal,
mm-hmm.
For example. And then even it's really tying social justice into the rules of kashrut, whereas you know, buying organic, going to farmers market,
mm-hmm.
using things that don't have pesticides, not eating vegetables that are out of season that need to be transported. So really thinking about the entire environment for the eco kashrut and all of the ethical issues as far as our animals are mm-hmm. concerned
so
as well.
Then one of the subtexts of what you're saying seems to me that kashrut, that's the right word, is alive. It's transforming itself with the times rather than being an ancient tradition that is just followed because it was written at one point. And it sounds like with halal, it's halal and haram. That too is they're living traditions
yes.
that are constantly evolving.
It is a living, but the basic concept is that it is obedience of God.
Mm-hmm.
And God says this or that. And then we follow that. So in the process, and then Prophet Muhammad, following the tradition of Abraham, he has taught us also that how we take care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still alive, and throughout the world, 1.5 billion people follow it.
Mm-hmm.
There are difficulties in some areas to follow it, but more or less we work edit and make it happen.
And that's something I want to talk about in our next segment. We're going to take just a little musical break here, and we'll be right back with more talk about halal and kosher here on Mouthful.
Thank you.
You are listening to Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. Thanks for sticking with us here. We are talking with Rabbi Stephanie Kramer of Congregation Shomrei Torah and also Imam Ali Siddiqui. I'm trying to get those double D's pronounced. And what is the organization here in Sonoma County?
There are several organizations. Okay. You know, I have one organization called Muslim Institute for Interfaith Studies and Understanding that I head there. Then also there is a masjid in Santa Rosa, Islamic Society of Santa Rosa.
Mm-hmm.
Then my ministry is in Novato.
Novato, okay.
Yeah, North Marine Islamic Center.
Mm-hmm.
And also I do ministry in Napa.
Oh, in Napa as well.
Yes.
So you have a big territory. You drive a lot.
I drive a lot.
Well, I really, really appreciate all of you taking time on your Sunday. One of the things I want to explore now is what it's like to pursue both of these traditions or practice these traditions here in America, in California, in the Bay Area. And I know that Les Blank, the great documentary filmmaker, has been a guest here on Mouthful several times. And one of the things he talks about is wherever people move from their native home, the last thing they give up, which is pretty much what they don't give up, is their culinary traditions. But depending on where you've come from, you have to make a lot of adjustments. So I know we had one halal market in Roanoke Park for a while. I was actually going to try to find someone who could come on Mouthful, and I drove there, and they were closed.
Yeah, Sal is closed.
Yeah, Sal's.
Yeah. And basically, our communities are not that large here.
Mm-hmm. About how big? How big a community?
Right, so about? it was not able to survive.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly, you know, the Muslim came to America in 889. I mean, it's like a long tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But what they did, the thing is just in the history, they were here and they did a trade and business and all that. But I don't know in the area of Halana and they have established anything or not. I came in 1969.
Where did you come from?
I came here from Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And we faced a lot of difficulties. We couldn't find any halal food. So then I have to resolve on my own expertise. Then I went outside of Los Angeles, went to Los Angeles, and I found a farmer who was Jewish who was selling live animals.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over there, and he says he was very happy to see me. And I choose a chicken, and he said, okay, go ahead and do the halal, and I will prepare it. So I did that, and, you know, and then he cleaned it up, you know, and packed it, and I took it home. And then more people showed up, and they found out that I can do this, you know. Then slowly, we started doing bigger animals, like we did the goats, and mm-hmm. we did the cows. And for the cows, we actually found out a kosher slaughterhouse. We went mm-hmm. kosher slaughterhouse because they are very convenient. And they are follow the same tradition, so we could be assured that it has the whole preparation was there already. Mm-hmm. So difficulties, but now there are a lot of Muslims lives in all the states here, including mm-hmm. even Alaska, and we have facilities. And as a matter of fact, not too far from here, there is a Muslim slaughterhouse also. So people can go there and do that. But mostly, especially in Sonoma County, there is a chicken farm. They're supplying organic halal chickens.
Oh, which one is that? Is that Petaluma Poultry?
Okay, Petaluma Poultry also doing halal now. I actually certified them uh-huh. myself.
Oh, okay.
And there's also, but they don't do organic. Organic mm-hmm. comes north, I forget the name at mm-hmm. this time.
Yeah, I know there's several small. There's Pepper Road Poultry, I think they're organic. There's a couple very small ones that
right.
are doing
small
that.
Small is a small, and, uh-huh. and they provide that, and that which we purchase now.
Mm-hmm.
And then also what happened is that this halal meat, processed meat, coming also from New Zealand and Australia. Mm-hmm. Which is now, for example, Food Max has that.
Oh,
They sell that both lamb and chicken. And then the whole food also has prepared food, actually dinners. They're selling halal dinners.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
And Costco used to have also, but then there was a protest against them, so they stopped.
What sort of protest?
Protested, they're saying they are aligning with the Muslims, you know, and terrorists and this and that went on. If you go to the website, you'll see a lot of horrible emails sent to them.
Oh, I'm so sorry that happened. Yeah.
So they don't carry it anymore, but Foodmax carrying it, Whole Food, although there was a protest against Whole Food also.
Really?
But Whole Food is still carrying it. And there's no halal vendor here in this Sonoma County and Marin County. We have to go to Berkeley. And usually most family go there and then load up for the month.
Yeah, and then I don't know if you know Salmon Creek Ranch. They're in the town of Bodega. Not Bodega Bay, but Bodega. They are doing halal slaughter. And they have goat. They have goat. They have cattle. I mean, and they're very small. They pretty much slaughter one steer at a time. But in their email that they sent out yesterday, they were just picking up the fresh goat, and it's halal. And they also have duck, which I think is also that. They're very good small farm, all organic, sustainable.
So they're run by Muslims?
No, they're run by a man who moved here from New Zealand quite a long time ago, and his wife, she was, I believe, a psychologist, and he's some sort of eye specialist and runs a nonprofit agency in San Francisco, but they loved this property, and it had been a ranch, and they wanted the property, and they realized what they had to do to maintain the property, so they have a goat. They also raise Saluki dogs. One litter every 2 years. Very good people and beautiful, beautiful lives that these animals
so
live.
One of the requirements of halal is that it has to be slaughtered by a Muslim. Does not have to be imam. Any Muslim can slaughter.
They take it, you know, they don't do the slaughter themselves. They take it.
Okay.
They take it to a plant, a processor that is the one who does the certification.
I think the same thing in the kosher also, isn't it?
Is that the case?
Yeah.
Yes. So, and Jewish foods, we have it a little easier around here. We can get kosher meats, a lot, chicken and beef, mini meats at Trader Joe's. And also, I recently saw, I haven't done it myself, but there at Costco, you can pre-order a big smorgasbord of kosher meat also. But a lot of my congregants that I hear that have moved to Sonoma County miss cultural Jewish foods.
That's another whole dimension of the cultural foods.
You were saying what do people miss? And that it really is. They miss the bagels that they grew up with. Mm-hmm. So wherever they grew up, if the bagels here aren't exactly the same.
The best in New York.
Right? Yeah. I think the best are in Houston, Texas, but that's because that's where I grew up.
You know, it's like if you leave the Bay Area and you go live like my daughter right now in Mississippi, sourdough bread, you just want that wonderful sourdough bread and you can't get it.
Right. And people also here crave deli. Sure. So, and even though we have delis here, you know, people crave the deli that they grew up with or the kind that they're used to.
The pastrami they grew up with. I do too. So yeah, that's very interesting.
Although you can't get schmaltz, which is chicken fat.
Schmaltz, you can't?
Yeah, you can't get schmaltz anywhere here. Just prepare. You have to render it yourself, which I was completely thrown off guard. I needed to make matzo ball soup this last Passover, and I just figured I was going to go to the grocery store and buy, you know, some
schmaltz. Gosh, I thought I'd seen it on the shelf.
Well, tell me where to go.
I will go look where I think I saw it, and I will send you an email if I did.
Oh, perfect. That would be great.
It seems like it.
Really?
It seems like I can see it on a shelf, but maybe I'm thinking of New York. But I'm going to go look at the store where I think it is. I'm going to go look, and I'll let you know.
Same thing true for with Muslims also. Traditional food we cannot find. Mm-hmm. And then for us, traditional food is different from person to person, and people coming from different countries here, it's not like a homogenous Going to Berkeley is catering to many tastes now.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have a lot of Afghan restaurants in Berkeley and Fremont, very good ones.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have any Indians or Arab or Middle Eastern food. But mm-hmm. now they have that.
Yeah, there's
too.
There's quite a bit.
But they also have challenge because there's a minimum wage, so they don't keep the chef and the workers working there.
Yeah. When you think back to your life in Pakistan, what do you miss most that you can't get here, food-wise?
Well, I can't get my mother's cooking.
Yeah.
But I remember how she used to cook, and I make some of those things that she make. In our family, on our holidays, we have two big holidays, one at the end of Ramadan, and the other one just passed after Hajj, pilgrimage to Mecca.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to make this called pulao with either chicken or goat meat. And that was our family tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Best.
What else was it? What sort of flavors?
So what happened is that you take the meat and first you make a stew. You put cook it slow.
Mm-hmm.
Put spices, which is like, for example, cardamom, cinnamon, bay leaf, and you put also ginger and onions and coriander seeds and fennel seeds. You put that and you cook it till the meat is tender. Mm-hmm. Then you take just the meat out and then you brown it in onions. And then you drain the liquid into it and then bring it to boil, and then you put a clean, you wash the rice and put in there. It has to be basmati rice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cook on it and put a cover on it and simmer. And then you take saffron and soak it in milk, and then you sprinkle on the top of it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds really, really good. And I know one thing. I think this year, Larry, the food festival you put on was the first annual food festival,
correct?
Right?
We've got a date for next year, by the way.
Excellent. Is there anything parallel in the Muslim community here in Sonoma County? Do you ever invite the public and feed them?
Well, actually, it's been done,
but
not like a festival as Shomei Torah did. But they had it open house, and they did as a potluck. The community brought the food there. And
this was the Muslim Society potluck, right? I remember reading about that and was very sad I couldn't attend.
And then we do that as the with the Shomei Torah and North Bay Muslim community at large.
Mm-hmm.
We come together and once a month we meet,
mm-hmm.
Either as a Muslim house or as a Jewish house.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this is also a potluck.
Ah.
And then we have a lot of variety of Muslim food that being served there.
And who?
It's really great, I have to tell you, because we get terrific attendance because the food is
so good.
And it's a total potluck. So, you know, the Jews and the Muslims bring, you know, some of our foods. Most of it is vegetarian. And there's some chicken, some halal chicken. And it's just fantastic. And that's a big part of it. And of course, Jewish traditions are, you know, and many religion traditions are built around food. And
everybody has to eat.
Everybody's got to eat.
Yes, and plus everyone has to feed. I mean, people love to feed each other.
It has brought us very close.
Mm-hmm.
So Jews mm-hmm. and Muslims are very close now because of these meetings.
Now, who is it who attends these meetings? Is it the congregation and then?
Right.
Yeah.
Our social action committee from Shomrei Torah started it, and one of our people found Ali. Like I say, I think it'll be 3 years at the end of this December,
mm-hmm.
and we got together in his apartment, and we talked about how we want to start a dialogue,
mm-hmm.
and it became a monthly event. But we also do picnics a couple times a year,
mm-hmm.
so the people bring their kids, And of course, food.
We and, of course, food.
And, of course, food.
Uh-huh. So, and it's a mouthful.
So our social action committee started it, mm-hmm. and so a lot of the people from the Jewish side are part of our committee, and they attend. And then Ali has introduced us to many Muslims in the North Bay, mm-hmm. Going all the way to Novato. We've had meetings there and different places, and the food is terrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Imam Ali, in reading about you just very briefly, one of the things that says you've done for a very long time is both work as a peace activist and a labor activist. Could you talk a little bit about that?
So actually, the peace tradition is my family trait. One of my uncles was actually the mentor of Gandhi for a short time, and I met Gandhi when I was a little child.
Really? Wow.
And it's a funny story, because my sister, who was just older than me, used to tell my grandfather and say, "Grandpa, we have to give him some clothes. He had no clothes." So it's kind of funny now. My uncle, his name is Maulana Muhammad Ali Johar. He was a poet also, and he was a peace activist. He is the first person I would say that who refused, and he's giving his verdict as a Muslim leader. He says it is haram to fight in the war. Mm. And that was disappointing to the British Raj in India at the time. And then and he told all the Muslim soldiers who were enlisted in the British Army to refuse. And my father was also in the army at the time, and he became the first refusenik. Didn't want to go. And then his whole company then became refused. They declared that they will not fight. And they were all court-martialed.
Really?
My mother was also... she was a traditional woman, but still was a very, very active in the community. Mm-hmm. She's always there to help anybody and everybody. And she will take families to the doctor, the hospital, be there when somebody's born. And she wanted to have a peace in the community. Mm-hmm. And that's what tradition I came with, you know. And then I was very active during my students' days in Pakistan. And I came here from the very first day I joined the March Against Vietnam War. Mm. And rest is history. Uh-huh. And also became active for the rights of low-wage workers. Mm-hmm. Mostly I worked for the low-wage workers, giving them the voice. And I went to represent them at employers, sat with them. So when they are negotiating for anything, wages or benefits, whatever, I was there with them. Mm-hmm. So this is and I would say it's my passion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a very noble one.
Thank
very
you.
Very noble. That's a really wonderful work. And what a great history for your family. It sounds like they were some of the first conscientious objectors. Thinking of a parallel tradition here.
And Prophet Muhammad also told us to seek peace, mm-hmm. and establish justice. Mm-hmm. So this is the tradition that we have to follow.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very good to hear about it, particularly at this time in America, even with an election coming up and so many histrionics, you know, being bandied about. So thank you for your work.
Well, you know, America is a great nation. Mm-hmm. Great nation. And the people I have met in the last 43 years, I just admire them. And I love to work with them, continue mm-hmm. to work with them. And mm-hmm. then some of them became my mentors also.
Mm-hmm. Good. I want to come back to Rabbi Kramer now. You mentioned Houston, Texas. So are you from?
I am. I'm from Houston.
Okay. What brought you to Sonoma County?
I after living in Houston, I went to rabbinical school. Uh-huh. My first year was in Jerusalem, and my next 4 years were in Los Angeles. And right after, out of rabbinical school, I landed the best job in the world at Sho Marie Torah in Sonoma County. So,
interesting. So were you born and raised in Houston?
I was.
You have no accent.
People from Houston don't have an accent. If you go outside of Houston, Houston's just so metropolitan.
I know Dallas more.
It's the fourth largest city in the U.S.
Yeah.
So, but if you go right outside of Houston, you'll get an accent. But I definitely say y'all a lot.
y'all is just a good word. You know, it's a very good all-purpose.
Just how to get to your point a little faster.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to take a very quick musical break and be right back with just a little tiny bit more to say.
Do you have any questions?
Flies on Mouthful, doesn't it? It's almost an hour. We've got just a couple more minutes. And I want to say thank you very much to Imam Ali Siddiqui.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
It's, you know, this has been an extraordinary hour for me. I have learned so much, and I'm very grateful. And Rabbi Stephanie Kramer, the same. Thank you so much. And you've got an event coming up.
Yeah, we have a Hanukkah celebration on December 15th at 6:15 at Congregation Sho Marie Torah. It's really open to the entire community. Come together, light Hanukkah menorahs, celebrate. I'm sure there will be delicious food there as well, and just celebrate as one community.
Mm-hmm. And I love Hanukkah. To me, the winter holidays are all about light. And I love that Hanukkah is more directly about light.
It is.
And, you know, I mean, it's the light's disappearing. And I think about what our ancestors, before they understood what that meant, what they felt is getting darker and darker every day. So to me, it's just all about light. That's how I get through all the nonsense of Christmas shopping. I just look at all the pretty lights. Those are beautiful. And then Imam Ali, you're going to be doing outreach and have an open house at the North Marin
Islamic Center in Novato. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go door to door and going to different churches and synagogue and talking to people. And then we'll organize the open house.
Uh-huh.
So it is not planned yet when, but most likely it will be in December. Sometime.
Okay. And is there a website for people who want more information?
There is no website this time.
Okay. But, you know, you can always stay in touch with Mouthful. And when things come up that we've talked about here on the program, I try to put that information up, especially on Mouthful's Facebook page, which is the easiest. So you just go to Facebook and you type in Mouthful and you find us. And Sho Marie Torah does have a website right now?
We do, www.shomaretorah.org. And you can also find us on Facebook. Please like us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Sho Marie, it's Shomreitorah.org.
Perfect.
Org.
Perfect.
And on that, and Larry Carlin, thank you so much for making this extraordinary hour happen. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
In the meantime, take care of yourself and take care of someone else too, and meet me back here on KRCB-FM.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling out, who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong. This land once open and free. Well, they got pictures in the museum of local color that used to be.